All right. Tonight, it's our semi-annual Audio Masters Roundtable. We've got some great guests. We've got Uncle Roy and Cliff Zelman.
Jordan Reynolds and John McClain.
And we're going to have a great time. If you've got a question for us, throw it in the chat room or email to us. You had your chance to email it to us, guys, at theguys@VOBS. But if you're in the chat room, you can ask a question. We're going to talk about all sorts of cool stuff with voiceover technology. Everything you've possibly ever wanted to know. Coming up next on Voiceover Body Shop.
Two men, twin sons from different mothers, with a passion for voiceover recording technology and the desire to make recording easy for voice actors everywhere. Together in one place, George Whittam, the home studio engineer to the stars, a Virginia Tech grad with an unmatched knowledge of all the latest gear and technology in voiceover today. Dan Leonard, the home studio master, a voice actor with over 30 years experience in broadcasting and recording, and a no-holds-barred, myth-busting attitude for teaching you how easy it is. Together, finally, to bring you all the latest technology, the superstars of voiceover today, and leading the discussion on how to make the most of your voiceover business. This is Voiceover Body Shop. And now, live from their super-secret multimedia studio in Sherman Oaks, California, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
Good evening. I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop.
Or VO.
BS.
You jumped ahead of me there.
Sometimes we just want to get the show off the ground.
That's true. And we got a lot to cover today. Because we've got, it's our semi-annual Audio Masters Roundtable. And it's not just any Audio Masters Roundtable. This is a hand-picked, selected group of individuals.
That's right.
Who are on our World Voices Organization Audio Technical Standards Committee.
That's a mouthful.
It is. And I remembered how all the words do it, too, which is even more impressive.
You remembered how it goes.
I know. But first, we need to thank our sponsors.
That's right.
For example, Harlan Hogan.
And VoiceOver Extra.
Edge Studio.
Source Elements.
Rehearsal App and VOTAGOGO.com.
And Uncle Roy's Antland Productions.
We can get yourself a killer demo if we don't kill him tonight first, which is quite the possibility. So no news tonight. No anything, you know, beyond what we really want to talk about.
No, we're getting right into it.
We're going to get right into the meat. So why don't we go around the horn here and introduce our guests, starting with a fresh face here on VoiceOver Body Shop, joining us from Las Vegas, Nevada, in Dog and Pony Studios, John McClain.
Hola, everybody.
How you doing tonight?
I am splendid, thank you. And yourself?
We're here, and that's the most important thing.
That's right, still breathing.
Did we hit record? Yeah, we're good.
We're good. We're having it. Good. Save for posterity.
Good to see you, John.
Just to make sure. All right. From Bloomfield, New Jersey, one of our favorite folks, Uncle Roy. Roy, in there?
Hey there.
No, that's Cliff.
No, wait.
Yeah, talk. There he is.
There. Who's
all
doing
right.
The switching?
Yes.
Isn't it automatic?
It's automatic, yes. Whoever talks.
And how is fall settling in there in New Jersey?
It's falling. I mean, we had a big rain and a big wind, and yeah, the leaves are falling. And while I was recording an audiobook today, the leaf blowers were out, and you know how it goes.
That's the standard thing.
Yeah.
Make sure that the leaf blowers are going. From Dallas, Texas, one of my favorite people of all time. Because for some reason he respects me. I'm not quite sure why. Cliff Zelman.
I'm keeping up the I'm keeping up the charade. No. man, I've had a horrible day today, you guys. I'm glad to be here with my brethren and getting me back down to earth. I had just a stack, and about 2:30 this afternoon, every incentive changed, every price changed. I got to start all over. Then I had a couple technical issues, but it's all good, and I'm here, and I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Yes. Now, you have promised to do new guitar riff on our theme here on Voice Over Body Shop. How is that coming along?
Well, my thumb is healing.
That's good.
I'm days away from pulling up the sound file and shredding some tracks in there.
We can't wait.
With baby, look at that. Oh, hello.
Ooh, nice Gibson. Ooh,
yeah.
Oh. Every night when I go to bed, I walk into the room just to look at it, just to touch the night. Still here.
Is it good night?
He caresses it.
I bring my wife now and this. Honey, I thought I'd just show you something. look at that. I know, honey. It's nice. It's nice. And you guys all know my wife, so you can picture that face.
Okay. Yes. Yes. It's nice. All right. Also joining us from Denver, Colorado. See, we're all over the freaking place tonight. We're everywhere. This is a widespread slew of humans that understand this business. But these are the six people I know.
Who said anything about understanding?
What? Anyway, from Denver, Colorado, Jordan, are you in there? Jordan Reynolds.
I'm here. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have
you. My day was not as bad as Cliff's, but hopefully it doesn't get there. We'll make it better, buddy. We'll make it better. That's a pill from here.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is.
Yeah. So the reason I've called you all here is because we've set the standards for voiceover quality for home studios, which apparently all these big studio engineers don't understand. They're like, have a big expensive microphone and an Avalon preamp and all of this really great stuff. To my knowledge, it's not really all that's not necessary if you're just starting out.
Well, just starting out can mean a lot of different things.
That's true. But here's the parameters. Here are the parameters that we came up with.
Yeah.
If I can find them here. I know they're here because they're on my computer somewhere. Okay. We sat down. Now, some of you guys weren't there, but Cliff and Roy and George and I were there. We decided what would be the standards that we want to set for voiceover home studio audio quality. And we came up with absence of plosives was like one of the top ones.
Absence of plosives.
Proper proximity and placement to your microphone.
Proper proximity and placement to the microphone.
Like this. This is the right distance, and this is where you should be. Does the microphone suit the candidate's voice, which is a question that we will talk about tonight.
Does it take care of my nasal issue?
You don't sound...
Yes, but I like it too.
Yeah.
You don't sound a bit nasally.
Super sibilant.
Yes. Is there headphone leakage, ground loops, and ambient noise, which could be...
How did you pick up the track?
Oh, sorry about the headphone leakage.
We talked about peak levels, range of -6 to -4 dB on your files.
How am I peaking?
Make sure that you leave people enough headroom. From an acoustical point of view, minimal observable room reflection and bass reflex.
Number one.
We hear that all the time. Minimal noise floor, -55. It says -45, but I think we changed that to -55.
I thought it was -60.
Well, maybe we changed it to -60.
Maybe it doesn't matter.
Maybe it doesn't matter. We'll discuss. And clarity of audio, is the audio muddy or overdriven?
Turn down the volume.
Right. Anyway, so those were the standards that we set. And those are, and the fact is unless you actually hear these things, you may not even understand what they are.
Right.
So anybody have any thoughts on some of those things? Let's go back to that first parameter about talking about, what was the first one we talked about? Oh, well, there was the acoustical thing. Because Cliff, you were saying acoustics is number one.
To me, that's always the big issue. You know, you go high end with your mic, you go high end with your DAW and your interface. But if your room sounds like dreck, the better your gear, the worse you're going to sound. So it's kind of a little bit of a, you know, the more expensive gear you have, the worse your room is, the more you're going to hear it. So I always think that the first place to start is where are you recording? Make sure that the environment is conducive to a recording environment. And the rest, you know, you get yourself a great sounding space, and it's real hard to tell the difference between a quality $250, $300, and $800, $900 microphone. There's some real budget microphones that sound terrific, you know, in a good environment. And you throw an expensive microphone like a C12, or Roy's got that. I'm always drooling over his 414. He knew I was going to talk about that. You put that in a fourth bedroom, it's going to sound terrible. So first things first, environment, acoustics.
John McClain.
Environment and acoustics. It's the number one thing. Everything Cliff just said, if your room's not dialed in, if your room sounds super reflective or you've got some really nasty bass notes or something going on in there, nothing you're going to buy is going to fix that in regards to a microphone or a preamp. So get your space dialed in. That's number one.
Okay. Yeah, now, one of the interesting things I think that a lot of people miss on this is that where you record may be different from where you listen to your playback. If you're listening on monitors, if you're on headphones, it really doesn't matter. But what kind of acoustics should one have in their home studio for listening back? George, thoughts on that?
For monitoring?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I was multitasking. A matter of choosing between headphones and monitors or a particular kind of headphones?
If you have studio monitors, how should the acoustics of the room be?
Oh, yeah. Well, tuning a room for studio monitoring is a different set of parameters than tuning a room for voiceover. Because with VO, there's a general understanding that the room should be very dry, which means it has almost zero reflection. And that means, like, technically an RT60 time of less than 0.1 seconds, which means, layman's-wise, when you clap your hands, the sound should die away.
Like in here.
In 1/10 of a second. Yeah, this, you hear how dead this is? It just goes away. That's a really, really dead room. But for monitoring, that may not be the greatest thing because it may sound very artificial. Because imagine the end user, the guy sitting in his living room or the person driving in their car. Is their room going to be that dry and dead sounding? Probably not. So if you mix in a room that's super dry and dead, you don't get an honest appraisal of the sound. But I don't know. That seems to be changing now that we're using near field monitors, you know, monitors that are really close to you. We're dialing out a lot of the room anymore. So we're getting to use speakers closer and closer. So the room becomes less and less of a factor, I guess.
Yeah.
But you don't want it to be echoey, that's for sure. You don't want it to be too live.
Right. And you've got to be able to understand what that means and hear examples of it.
Yeah.
Jordan, how are you set up?
I had to reconnect, so I missed kind of.
The question was, we were talking about room acoustics, but primarily for where you listen to playback.
Oh, well, I'm in my basement, which first blocks a lot of noise from getting in, which is great. But so it keeps it really quiet, so I don't have any distracting noises around, like loud fans or ambient car noise outside. But as far as the acoustics go, I have bass 4-inch bass traps in each corner that go from the floor to the ceiling. I have acoustic cloud, 2-inch clouds, panels above me. And I even have what's it called? First reflection point, acoustic panels placed. I know that doesn't make a lot of sense to most people, but that's the room that I listen to my, editing or my voiceover work in. And then of course what I mix demos in, it's gotta be just right. So it's overkill for a voiceover studio, but having at least some treatment in the environment you listen to, if you have speakers, is a good idea. Is it necessary? No. And I think it's probably better. You're going to get better results editing your voiceover auditions and work with headphones rather than trying to get your room dead silent and putting up enough acoustic treatment to where it's not going to overly affect the sound and make it sound more sibilant or more echoey or more boomy than it really actually is. So that's my two cents.
Okay. Now you're a sound engineer, mixer, sound designer. How do you have yourself set up for monitoring yourself?
I have near field monitors. I have different monitors because old school we used to mix through Auratones and through the Q speaker of the tape machine and big speakers so that we don't know what the end user is listening to. If they're in their car, chances are it's going to be some big sound. If they're on their laptop, and so your mix has to translate and be cool on all of these different listening environments. So multiple speakers, certainly a dead environment. You don't necessarily need a whisper room or studio bricks per se. And if you do, those things are going to need treatment for the inside. I have the famous, I have two panels of studio suit in my whisper room on top of Oralex and some bass traps, because it really needs all of that. But I have some curtains, some soft, you know, soft material, carpet on the floor. Just get your environment. And the big, I think one of the biggest culprits of the room being too live is the ceiling, the bounce off the ceiling. You know, people, if your sound gets out and hits the ceiling and comes back, that's a deadly combination there.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I like to say when I'm talking to people is, because I actually got a question today from a client, somebody who I've, whose studio I've worked on, and he's like, well, so-and-so said I need a 416, and at the Perception 220 I'm using now is a toy. I won't mention any names who called it a toy, but the fact of the matter is I always say it's not the equipment that gets you work, it's how you use it. And I tend to think, now, Cliff, now you get a lot of stuff from people all over the place because we need to explain, you're a commercial producer, right?
Right. I get MP3s from all levels. I'll tell you, I know we haven't started talking about emerging technology, but I got something to say.
We'll get there.
Yeah, the stuff that I get's good. You know, I'm working with guys and gals that do this every day for 15 years. But it's always the performance. But what's happening now is, you know, it used to be 100% performance and then let the engineers and the guys in the white shirts and the pencil protectors do the recording. But now that we're all recording and you guys are all recording yourselves, now it's getting to like 50-50, where you could be turned down by, a really bad audio quality, because the mindset is now turning towards people are recording from their studios or professional studios or personal studios. So what we hear is what we expect. And as the years have been going on and as we've been working so hard together as a group and a community, I can honestly say the audio is getting really good. Stuff that I'm getting from guys that have only been doing it for a year in comparison to people that have been doing it for 10, 15 years, the audio is really getting good. The gap is starting to narrow, and that's a good thing.
Now, you produce a lot of commercial material, too. What have you been seeing? I mean, people are, you know, everybody and their brother-in-law is in voiceover now. It just amazes me how many people are doing it. And I'm sure you do a lot of remote sessions with people and stuff. What type of equipment are people telling you what they're using? And do you ever get situations where someone's saying, where you're saying, you know, that's not right. What are you using? Do you ask?
You know, it's never an equipment question. I can't say I've ever run into that. It can be a room sound question, though. You know, Jordan was talking earlier about the treatment and whether it's sibilant or whatnot. I think one of the problems that I tend to run into is that people over-treat the space they're recording in so that it sounds overly dead and a little bit too boomy. That's the biggest problem that I run into.
Yes, John.
A little bit of bounce in that reed. It can't be completely dead.
Right.
It's really hard to work with when it's completely dead, especially in a small space.
A lot of the big, expensive, very expensive studios is finding that perfect balance between hard surface and absorption.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you go into, and John's a music engineer, I know Roy is too, when we go into the big studios, most of the main recording area is parquet floor with carpet around the edges, overhead baffles. But
we're looking for baffles. Wood. We're looking for wood.
Yes, wood. We are definitely looking for wood.
My boots both have wood floor in them.
Yeah, yeah. So it's striking that balance of what you sound like in real life with a real environment, yet your environment isn't fighting or your environment isn't adding additive delay that can create comb filtering and all kinds of nasty.
Especially if your voice is in the clear. If there's music, if it's too dead, it's probably going to be okay, and you can artificially liven it up a little bit. But if it's in the clear, yeah, it could be really deadly.
Yeah, it's like recording a piano.
I disagree. I have to disagree.
Okay.
You son of a...
Back it up, baby.
I kind of want this to be more like the debates, personally. But so, so
well, you're wrong.
Nasty voice actor.
You. Have Mara stalk you around the.
She's already stalking me. Ah!
Jordan, let me get control here again. Jordan, you're on.
No, I don't. I disagree mostly because, you know, mixing demos and everything. It's the more dead it is, the better. And I feel like you guys are saying what you're hearing is valid, or what you're saying is you hear too much boominess. I think that might be mistaken for being too dead. And all that is a lack of low end treatment. Because if there's just a little bit of slapback, or there's you can hear a little bit of a room, and then you add more treatment, and then it's more dead, then that there was bass buildup already in there. It was already boomy, but because you have a little bit of slapback, it's kind of, in my opinion, it's kind of masking over. It's not accentuating the low end buildup that was already there. Yeah, and then you add more Oralex and you make it really dead, but then there's no bass treatment, then it sounds boomy. Yeah. So if you make it really dead, but treat it with bass traps properly, because boos are horrible at being too boomy, especially when they're really dead. It's very apparent. So I prefer to be totally dead, but treated well in the low end. Otherwise, it's a really bad. Then it's really bad and boomy. So that's I don't know if that made any sense, but that's kind of how I feel about it personally. For music and stuff, though, I want a little bit more liveliness. But for voiceover, I prefer it as dead as possible, but with very good low end treatment.
Yeah, I've always been if it's pretty dead, but you at least let the room breathe a little bit. You can, as we were saying, you can add a little bit of room liveliness through filtering and stuff. But John, I wanted to ask George.
I heard John mentioning.
Yeah, John, you had something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, perhaps boomy is the wrong word. Woofy might be a better description of what I feel is an overly dead room. I don't want to hear a slap in the room. I want there to be a certain amount of life to the room.
Right. Sure. A closet, a pillow fort. Even the chaotica eyeball takes away so much presence and breath, you know. And I think that I know what Jordan is saying. Jordan is saying, you know, let us tailor. You know, if you give us really clean stock, there's more that we can do with it. But I would rather have just a little bit of sizzle, a little bit of air in there.
Agreed.
And that gives you presence. That gives you dynamic range. And it sounds real. It doesn't sound like you're sitting under a bunch of blankets or and next to Aunt Minnie's coats and stuff.
Yes.
But what Jordan's saying is absolutely valid. Most of the booming that we're hearing is because of bottom end buildup.
But I mean, Cliff, I mean, can you possibly achieve that sound that you guys are looking for, that openness in a 4x4 whisper room? Is it possible to get that sound in an ISO booth or a closet?
No, you can't. But I've been getting some the girls that I've been working with, for some reason, the last three demos I've done have been all women, which is kind of cool. Three out of three killer audio, all coming from booths. I mean, just wonderful stuff. And EA George, and even one of them, Uncle Roy, helped out a little bit. And you can achieve beautiful sound from a booth, but you know, George is definitely the guy to call to throw up those bass traps up there.
All righty, we've got our WOVO technical committee here tonight, where it's our Audio Masters Roundtable on VoiceOver Body Shop. Lots to cover. If you got a question, throw it in the chat room, and we will we'll get it to our panel of experts here. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Every Monday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific.
VoiceOver Body Shop. I love when they talk BS about you.
Hiya, VO friends. You say you ain't booked a VO gig in 7 years, and your demo is so old that you can hear the clicks from the stock music records, and you hear so much tape hiss that you run to the sink to see if the faucet is running, and the engineer used so much echo on your voice that it sounds like it was recorded in the Grand Canyon, and the scripts seem a bit dated too, advertising the new and improved 1938 Plymouth Road King? Is that what's been troubling you, Bunky?
Well, lift your head up high and take a walk in the sun.
Your demo can be killer, too. Just contact Uncle Roy at AtlantProductions.com and book yourself a shiny new killer demo. Show your stick-to-itiveness and show the world you'll never give up, never give up, never give up that dream.
Hey, everybody. Well, I'm here to talk about one of our sponsors on Source Elements is one of our sponsors on VOBS.TV. Everybody that's on the panel tonight knows exactly what Source Connect is. And maybe later we'll talk a little bit about their thoughts on the best technologies for streaming audio between studios. But for the next 1 minute, there is only one that you should use, and that's Source Connect. Source Elements has been sponsoring the show for a good year now. And there's a reason. It's because they know that you, the audience, are the people that they want to have listening to their message. And the reason is Source Connect is the tool for you. If you're a voice actor wanting to connect to studios in real time, streaming audio between studios, yours and the commercial studio that you're working with, the quality is stellar. The support is really great. They've got 24-hour international support. And they've got to the point now where generally, if there's a problem with the connection, it's almost always user error at this point. It's gotten very reliable, and the quality is just really fantastic. If you want to give Source Connect a try, if your ISDN's getting wonky, if you can't get ISDN, if it's too darn expensive, and your clients are saying, got to have Source Elements, Source Connect to use to be on our roster, now's the time. You can get a demo. It's a 15-day free trial demo, actually, of Source Connect. Just go to sourceelements.com and sign up today and give it a shot. Thanks a lot, Source Elements. We appreciate it. And we'll be back in a second with our panel.
VoiceOver Body Shop, where you can learn everything from mic technique to how to market your voiceover business to acting your way out of a wet paper sack, which is my favorite, by the way.
VoiceOver Body Shop. Learn the latest in voiceover technology. Learn how to get rid of that. VoiceOver Body Shop, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, on VOBS.us.
And now another live spot, because we can never have enough. By the way, Source Connect, all the studios are starting to use it now. Coming around.
This is the year.
Absolutely. But this is time for the home studio master to talk for a second. One of the things I love to do is, aside from doing this show every week, which is more fun than a human should be allowed to have, as David Letterman used to say all the time, is I get to do webinars. And I've got one coming up on November 9th. If you're interested in learning how to edit better, in learning how to record better and edit better using any type of software that you would use for recording and editing for VoiceOver, Audacity, Adobe Audition, Twisted Wave, those sorts of things. On November 9th, over at VoiceOver Extra, you can go over there and sign up. It's only like $40, and I will go over in amazing detail using DAWView. I'm instead of just the old watching a PowerPoint and I'll be talking about stuff and playing a few things back, we'll be showing you using the blue screen and how I will step into these actual digital audio workstation platforms and show you all the techniques for editing properly single mono track voiceover dry tracks and how best to edit them so they sound like you read it all in one take. So go over to voiceoverextra.com. Click on webinars. Maybe you get an email from John Florian over there. And just click into there and email him and say you want to be at that particular webinar. It's at 6 o'clock Pacific time, November 9th, which is 9 o'clock Eastern time, and I think 11 a.m. in Guam. So make sure it's live, and you get a free recording of it. So go over to voiceoverextra.com and sign up for that particular webinar. You will not regret it. And we'll be back with our great panel again right after this bumper.
VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
Thanks for joining us once again for another episode of VoiceOver Body Shop.
And we are back on VoiceOver Body Shop, our Audio Masters Roundtable. Always love doing this because, one, it's great to get together with all our friends.
Yeah.
And stuff. Guys who have something in common, because as I say, there are only maybe six, maybe seven people on God's green earth that really, truly understand a home voiceover studio, as mm-hmm. opposed to a real, you know, a nice place with guitar hanging on the wall and windows and a beautiful couch, usually a fabulous babe or two hanging out or something like right. that. That's a recording studio. Your closet is not supposed to have guitars hanging on the wall unless you play guitars.
Right.
Right.
And so, you got commercial studios versus personal studios.
Personal studios. Yeah. Exactly.
We're talking about personal studios tonight.
Right. So, and one of the things we wanted to talk about, we were just talking about, was, you know, what that room sounds like. And you design studios. And I'm sure some of the different voice artists around Hollywood have different parameters of what they want things to sound like and what they look like, of course. But they use a variety of materials. Like, I know Bo Weaver, a friend of ours, likes having some brick in there along with some wood. What are some of the things that you put into it to adjust the sound?
Yeah, I mean, I've been kind of sticking with traditional, going full-on absorbing, you know, all absorbing panels, as opposed to delving into diffusion. And, you know, maybe next year will be the year I start experimenting more with diffusion, because I have been of the mindset that diffusion is not that useful in really small spaces. The difference between diffusion and absorption is diffusion is designed to scatter the sound, and absorption is designed to suck it away. So the idea being that if you use the right amount of combination of the two, you can make a small room sound like a little bit larger room. That's what I've been understanding. So the problem is most diffusion solutions are much more expensive than absorption.
Right. There are all these custom-built baffles and things
like that. Yeah, and you're starting to see more companies make these mass-produced, so they're becoming more and more accessible, less expensive. But the thing is, there's every company has their own philosophy on how to make these. And they're all a little bit different. But I still tend to go with acoustical panels that have an insulation on the inside, something like Pro Panels from Oralex, ATS Acoustics panels. They have a substrate underneath its insulation. On the outside, it's fabric. They look really nice. You can get them custom made, different sizes. They're really well built. They'll last forever. And generally, they don't smell too bad, like some of the older foam products used to. They don't degrade and start flaking off on your clothing. I'm just a really big fan of going with the fabric panel solutions. What do you guys use in your own studios at home? Are you using a mixture of foam and fabric? What do you guys use in your studios? So I'll start with John.
I use GIK acoustics panels.
Oh yeah.
And then a few that I made myself after I took apart a GIK and saw that it was really easy. I use ASC tube traps.
Oh, yeah.
And then on the ceiling, I just have some, I've suspended some 2-inch Owens Corning 203. What? No, 703, sorry.
Yeah.
And just put a nice transparent fabric over the top of it, and it works great. I had a guy come in and shoot the room, and I was pretty flat all the way down to 100 and then very gently sloped off. So it turned out really well.
Well, that's pretty good.
I've mixed... you know, we do a lot of commercials and a lot of games, but I've mixed some film in there, had them checked on the dub stage in Los Angeles, and got the thumbs up from those guys. And we've done three or four films that have been picked up for distribution now. So room sounds good.
What are you using?
I have Oralex behind my monitors. I'm using Focal monitors, so I kind of want them in a little bit more of a live environment, because the majority of what I do is, you know, editing and mixing. I have the Focal headphones also that match the monitors very, very clearly. I'm not looking for a dead space because I really don't record that much. And the stuff that I record, I'm usually screaming and yelling, so it doesn't really matter. But I have, to me, the most important thing is the, you can kind of see here, behind, wait, let me get this way, behind my speakers.
A mud flap.
Yeah, basically a big old mud flap. And that keeps, you know, the walls bouncing and hitting me, competing with what's coming out of my speakers. My room's somewhat live, and I really like it. And the stuff that I hear on the radio and stuff that I hear on TV sounds exactly like what is coming out of my Focal. So I'm pretty happy with it. I got a lot of stuff around in the room, too, that kind of disperses the sound. But really, my main suck-up is going on behind my speakers.
Nice, right, man. And then we didn't get to ask Uncle Roy.
Yeah. We know Uncle Roy has a booth there.
Yeah, the Emmys. You
I
know,
think Uncle Roy, he uses Emmys for diffusion and Pez dispensers.
The bowling trophy is really good. It really absorbs. No, as everybody who's been here knows, there's lots of stuff here that absorbs sound. So it's pretty dead. The Whisper booth is carpeted, so it's unto itself is dead and absorbs, and the cats like to climb it and things like that. I have two ClearSonic panels that when I'm recording in the booth, if it gets a little noisy out, I put the panels in front of it. As I said before, I have a studio suit on top of Oralex in there. And speaking of smells, no, it's finally going away.
lots of breeze.
Put it out and air it out for a few days before I hung it up and Febreze it, you know. So, no, it's cool. It's cool now.
I think, Jordan, you already told us what you're using.
Actually, I told you what I'm using in my room, but in my booth, it's a mixture of things. I like to keep it seasonal, so right now it's covered in pumpkin skins, personally. But in my booth, it's actually, I use the, sorry, Dan, but I'm using Audimute blankets. I forgot what they call them. Studio blankets?
Producer's
friend.
No apologies needed.
But that's what I'm hanging on the walls. And then the ceiling, because I have a huge 80 hertz bass, to those who don't know what I'm saying in the hertz range, I have a huge bass peak because of the dimensions of my booth. Even though it's a 5.5 by about 6 foot booth, it's a pretty big booth.
That's nice.
But my ceiling is so low that there's a big bass boost, and I'm a big stick. Like I was saying earlier, I hate that boominess, the woofiness sound of booth. So I actually have GIK Acoustics, what John had. They design, they're called, what are they called? Membranes. Membrane. I can never say that word. Tuned just to 80 hertz. Like, so that's their special frequency that they absorb, and they're 5.5 inches thick, and I have those above my head. So those are good solutions for as an extreme. Bass traps just don't do it. You have to go the membrane route, which cut the problem down by about 70%.
Nice.
So I don't have rigid fiberglass in my booth because the blankets did enough at blocking the mids and the highs for all the walls and made it dead enough. And then I do have a super chunk in the corner. It's just covered. I have a bunch of fiberglass cut up in a corner. But other than that, it's not a bunch of panels in my booth. It's just the blankets, membranes, and then in my mixing area, it's all rigid fiberglass.
Cool, excellent. Man. Yeah, I just found a room calculator at amrock.andymel.eu. Just Google it. Google the room mode calculator. I typed in 5.5 by 6 feet by 7 feet tall. And guess what this the what first room mode frequency is? Drum roll.
It's 80.
80 hertz.
80 hertz, right on the nose. Wow. So there you go.
It's funny. I mean, as a very short story, it was driving me so I'm going to need to do a video on it someday, but I could hear it in all of my recordings, and I don't have a terribly deep voice, so that's what drove me nuts even more. But long story short, I spent about almost a year trying all these different like rigid fiberglass and
cotton,
recycled cotton. You know, George knows the story.
Yeah.
And I could hear an 80 hertz peak. Like I targeted at 80 in my ear, and I hired an acoustician to come over, and he set up a monitor with a shotgun mic, and ran frequency sweeps and created waterfalls. Some people know
that's shooting the room, by the way. Yeah. When Cliff mentioned, John said shooting the room, that's what they're referring to by shooting the room.
I don't know live, but that makes the okay, shooting the room.
Yeah.
That's good. Something else more violent.
Did you use Shaps and do like an MS or an XY in there to get the reading, or did you do it mono, George?
He just did. The guy who came in and did it here in Denver did it mono. Okay. So it was really expensive, but he pointed out the problems, and then I bought the membrane traps, and that seemed to do the trick. So,
nice.
But yeah, you can have mine was an extreme case, but most of the time, bass traps can get rid of that. So,
and when that's gone, oh, it just sounds so great, doesn't it? I mean, it just opens up everything. Oh, there's my top end. Yeah, it's
exactly.
I'm a little tired of notching out 80 or 280.
It's the not fundamentals. It's the harmonics, of that, because you could put a high pass filter at 75 or 85 and think you're done with it, but it's those upper low.
Yeah, it doesn't. That was what I did originally, and it only does so much. And then at that point, you're sucking out some frequencies that you don't necessarily have to, and it just doesn't sound as natural as you want it to.
Because that's where that notch filter and just crank it up to the ceiling and start sweeping until it just starts resonating in your room, and then
until
it blows out your speakers. Pull those speakers pop out across the room. Yeah. you know it when you hear that massive whir.
There's a handful of voice talent where I get it where that thing sits right at about 120 hertz every time.
Yep, and women are around 280.
Yep.
See, now this is the stuff, guys. That those of you sitting at home going, what? But these are the guys that get your audio, and they're the ones that'll go. This is how they clean it up. This is how they fix it. Which is why we emphasize that it's so important that your acoustics be right. And if there is an issue, you can ask George and I. You can ask any one of these guys, and they can help you get it where it's supposed to sound as natural as possible. But let's move on from this a little bit before we totally geek out. Let's geek out in another area. For example, this is a test microphone I've got here today. They're starting to send us stuff. So if you're a manufacturer and you want to send us stuff to test, please send it.
Pass it around. Share it.
Yeah, I know. You know, I know Jordan has a great microphone that he helped design. This is from a company called Vanguard. I had never heard of Vanguard Audio before.
And but now all of you have.
And now all of you have.
Because they sent a mic to us.
This is their V13. This is a 9-pattern condenser mic.
Tube
mic. And, it sounds pretty good from it. To me, I listened to it. It sounded really natural. It was uncolored to me, which is very, very important. I don't want anything overemphasizing or coloring my voice at all.
But your room sounds really good.
Well, that's.
So a lot of mics sound relatively uncolored. Remember when we did that that big shootout?
Right.
With all the $500 mics?
Right.
They all sounded within 5% of each other, I'd say, right?
Right. So the question now becomes, this is what I was leading up to, is mic choice. Does it matter?
And at what point does it matter? Obviously it matters to some degree. Obviously there are mics that if they're just going to sound awful. Maybe do we dare call out mics that you just shouldn't use?
Well, they're not
there's probably more mics that you should use than shouldn't. So maybe it's easier to call out the ones you don't use. Right. Who's the first ones to call out a mic that you should never use?
Yeah, 1A, NT1A.
NT1A.
John.
Don't use that mic.
Mics not to use?
Yeah, we're going to start with mics not to use. So Rode NT1A. And the thing is that is probably one of the most common starter voiceover mics that there is. Yeah, like
And I'll put an asterisk on that because there's a couple of Vegas talent who use that mic and they sound great on it. But the majority of people don't sound good on that microphone.
Well, they package and market it well. So you get it with the shock mount and the interface and all that. So it looks very appealing.
Right.
As long as you don't have to listen to it.
Right.
Audio 2020. Do you guys, no AT 2020 either.
No.
And that was, that was the mic I started on. I still recommend it for a starter mic.
Well, now you're grown.
We're not talking, but are we, yeah, we're growing.
You just trying to pick fights now. No, I blue.
RE20. RE20, unless you really know it.
Yeah, yes. RE20.
Great microphone. I mean,
if you use an RE20, you need a cloud lifter because it's a low output
dynamic mic.
Yeah.
Although radio mic.
The RE320 is actually pretty good.
Yes. The RE27 is a little brighter than the RE20. I'm not ragging on
it. It's still low output. It's still low output.
It's definitely low output.
Yeah, the 320 is a magnet mic. Yeah. It's more out, has more output. Yeah. I'm gonna chime in with the USB snowball. do not
use I've heard some good stuff on Yeti, you know.
Man, that one's a toughie. Like, I hate the design of the mic. Yeah. I hear audio sometimes and I go, really? That's a Yeti?
Yeah, the chat room's lighting up with people wanting to know why we're shooting down these microphones.
Well, all right. Okay. So let's
tell you why.
Go for it.
Go
for it.
Yeah, go ahead. Every voice talent that's come to me with either a verbal complaint, like they say, my clients keep telling me I have too much sibilance in my recordings. Or if I just hear it, I've called it out. I'm like, that's an NT1A. That's the mic you have, isn't it? Every time, it's always
sounds like bacon sizzling in the pan.
Yeah, it's a cheap Chinese built condenser, so it just has too much. It's a bad bright crispy sound.
There's no bottom. There's no bottom to it also, so it sounds thin,
and it's hollow and really it hurts my ears, and it's not good for sibilance and bad on most women, from what I've heard. So that's my summary. Would anyone agree?
What about the NT1 though? The new remix of the NT1 that they just came out with.
I think that sounds good.
I like the one.
So they listen
with the samples that I've heard.
Yeah, so they listen to the users out there and they revoiced the mic, I guess.
And it's not that much more expensive. What is it, $50 more than the 1A that we hate?
Yeah.
So what are some good mics? Now, well, here's one that we haven't talked about, that a lot of people. Now, this is one I get a lot, is the SM7B. Again, another broadcast mic, but it's
dark.
It's kind of dark, and you get a lot of people using that for car commercials.
I get a lot of people using it for promos.
Really? You have to mic it close.
You get right up there, you know. A lot of people. I like that microphone.
Yeah, that's like
what it is. I mean, it is, you know, you buy that microphone for that specific sound.
Right.
A lot of the other microphones just sound good, but that sure has its own characteristics that I'm familiar with a lot of other microphones.
Yeah. So
just got to toss this out there, though.
Yeah.
You know, we can hate on microphones. Like I said, I'm no fan of the NT1A, but there's a couple of talent here in Vegas who sound really good on that microphone. But microphones are like going out to buy shoes, for instance, right?
Hey,
you got to try them on. If you don't try them on, if you just sit here and listen to a panel of audio dorks tell you that this microphone's good and this microphone isn't good, you may end up with the wrong microphone simply because whatever we do recommend doesn't fit your voice.
Right.
What do you call it, George? On Facebook, when somebody asks a question, you call it something through committee. What is it?
Oh, tech support committee. Or
tech support by committee.
Opinions are like, you know what? Everybody has one. Well, I was going to say the reason, John, you've heard good NT1As is because those people had me make twisted wave stacks to re-EQ the mic to sound good. That's why.
There you go. Well, you did a fine
job. I will say why the snowball. Why the snowball? The one good thing about the snowball, it was really one of the very first USB mics, right? Yep. They were trailblazers with that mic. But they really haven't improved it over the years. It has no proper gain adjustment. It's not very sensitive.
It has multiple patterns in it.
It's got multiple patterns, neither of which really sound useless, that great. And it has a high noise floor. It's hissy.
Yeah.
So those are the reasons why I don't like that mic. If you want a cheap USB mic, I did a massive shootout of USB mics, and if you want something cheap that's USB that plugs right in, it sounds good. I was really impressed with the believe it or not, the IK Multimedia Studio mic, which is very tiny. It's kind of their Apogee mic killer for like $179. I thought it sounded really darn good, and it's got a proper headphone gain control. It's got a headphone monitor, works on Android, iOS, Mac, Windows. I thought it sounded darn good. So there's some good ones out there that aren't that expensive.
Yeah. But not the Snowball.
Not the Snowball. And, you know, the Yeti is an acquired taste. I think it's a very cool mic to look at, but
yeah, you know, who looks at it
in terms of you know, industrial design, it's just very awkward. If you want to put it up on a mic stand on a boom, it weighs a ton and it doesn't have a proper mount for it. The shock mount they sell is the size of a dinner plate. Because for nowhere to hold this
huge,
it's just a really big, awkward microphone. I'm not a big fan of it just because of the industrial design. It's clean enough, but ugh, too awkward.
Right. So, gentlemen, what is a good mic that you would recommend? No, not, and I'm not saying
let's have your favorite under 300,
under 300, maybe 350,
and then your favorite aspirational,
yeah,
mic maybe.
Let's start with Cliff.
Best mic that I've heard for 200, 300 and under would be, and you all know what I'm going to say, the Perception 220. I think it's a great microphone for the money.
AKG Perception 220.
They don't make it anymore. I think now they're making a 240. They change the model every year. But when I first heard it, put it up against some microphones that were four times the price, I didn't hear four times the difference. So I really like that. It's built solid. They sound great. They're heavy. And they work wonderful. As far as higher-end microphones, I'm a big fan of the 416. I think the clarity is wonderful. Not such a huge fan. Don't anybody get mad at me or start posting in the chat room, but not a huge fan of the TLM-102 or 103. I think they're a little brittle. But I think just if I only had one microphone, and that would be it, it would be a 416. Or Royce 414.
John McClain.
You can borrow it. Put it in my will.
John.
No, I don't want it that way.
John McClain, your thoughts.
Interesting on the 414 because I just sold a couple of matched pairs. A little brittle for my taste. And then again, yeah. I'm here on the TLM-103, so I like that microphone. Although I find it's a little, it tends to be a little woofy in the lower mids. Hey, look, you can see Declan staring in the back window behind me. Microphone, I don't know about sub 300. If you're going to go a little bit more, the Shure KSM-32 is actually a pretty nice microphone for right around $400.
Uh-huh.
416, of course. I love that microphone. Trying to think of... my personal favorite, I brought it to the Wovacon mic shootout. A lot of people were pretty surprised by it. The Rode K2 valve mic, as the Brits call it, a tube mic. Amazing sound, right about $500 to $600. Really nice microphone. That's
a good price point for that.
Oh, excellent. Let's mention the Roswell.
Well, we were going to get to that, Jordan.
Oh.
Jordan?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what I'd recommend.
Go for it.
Okay. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so under $300, it's not on Sweetwater for some reason, but it's on some other websites. The Lewitt LCT-240.
Good call.
It's $300.
I agree.
It's $300. Lewitt is an Austrian company, boutique-ish. And the reason that mic came out after the 640, which is what I'm going to recommend other than the Rava, which I'll get to for the third mic. But in the upper range at the $800 price point, there's the Lewitt LCT. Oh, sorry. It's actually $600, $600 or $700. Lewitt LCT 550. I'll put these in the chat. 240. Then the upgrade is a 550. And that I love those mics. I have a 640, which is essentially a 550. I use that mic all the time. And I also use this mic all the time. I don't just use the mic I helped design. I just like too many different colors and sounds. So, but the mics that stay mounted in my booth are the Lewitt LCT 640 and the Roswell Ravo RA-VO, obviously, which is $1,000. So that's more the top of the price range.
Love that.
So I could list a bunch of other mics, but I'm a big Lewitt fan. The Caddy 100S is great for the money on most people, but the Lewitt mics are just really solid for the money. So big fan.
Uncle Roy.
I use a very unconventional Shure 81. Microphone.
Oh, an SM-81.
Yeah.
81, which when they brought us to the studio, they threw it across the room. It landed on the capsule and they said, now let's plug it in and see how good it sounds.
So they built it like a 58.
Well, it's a condenser, yeah. Mike. It is a condenser, and Mike.
John, the 414s that you sold, were they the newer, more digitally ones, or which?
I bought them in 2004.
Okay.
Yeah, mine is like 1980s vintage.
Oh, yeah. We had those at Ron Rose Productions in Detroit. I love that AK.
Yeah, so that's an EB.
That's the EB.
Yeah, and when the capsule finally went, just to replace the capsule was $400.
Worth every penny.
Yeah, so it sounded great. When I grew up in the studio, all we had were tube 47 and 48s.
C12s and C24s. I know.
And Cliff and I collect microphones for different reasons because we do music as well. I like my CAD. I love one of my favorite mics for me is the MXL 990. And another reason we all have different microphones is Jordan and Cliff and I produce demos. And when you're recording and you want the sound to be different, we change microphones so that each spot has a different sound to it.
All right. Here's one of my personal favorites. This is the Universal Model X. Get a close shot of it there, Andy.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Yes, it's the
Where did you get that?
Where did I get that? Where do you get any of this stuff? You know, it was, you know, I stole it from some radio station. No, this is
my brain's going, video killed the radio.
No, yeah, no, absolutely. No. And I've actually got this thing to work, which is actually kind of cool, but you know, they don't build them like this anymore. I mean, this thing is probably 80 years old and it still works. So but anyway, no, I personally I have a bunch of different mics. Cliff, you know, insisted I use a baby bottle.
Loved it.
You know, and it sounded pretty good. And I've used that for a little bit. I've got my 103 and I've got a 416. And it depends on my mood or what I'm getting hired on. You know, if people are hiring me with a mic, I just keep using it. And that sort of thing. But I did my demo with Cliff on the baby bottle, and I keep that one handy. And I also had these things on quick change mounts, so I can change microphones very, very quickly.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, actually, because we've been blabbing on for too
blah,
long.
Blah,
so
blah,
we're going to be
blah.
Back, and this time we're going to go to the chat room questions.
All right.
Cool.
So we'll be right back.
Learn the latest in voiceover technology,
business,
and good old-fashioned acting.
Hey, Paul, I really like your suit. Where did you get it? It looks good on you.
This is VOBS.
Learning never ends.
You continue to grow.
Edge Studio has grown. Pursue multiple disciplines in tandem and grow your career. We've added new courses in a new curriculum.
We picked the best coaches from the community of working voice actors.
A new technology division, engineering and consulting, led by George Whittam.
Follow your dream.
Sign up for advanced learning or register for an introduction to voice acting or foundation studies program.
See it all now
at thenewedgestudio.com.
Lighting broke out overnight for Sundays. And
what do you want to watch tonight?
I don't know. I mean, the same stuff's always on all the time.
Oh, I am so sick of American Pickers. What about VOBS?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, you just read my mind.
I can't believe
that's
it.
Perfect.
I want to watch it because you know why? They got the best BS about VO.
VOBS. Mondays, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific on VOBS.us.
All right. You know, David H. Lawrence XVII is a great guy, you know, busy guy, you know, screen actor, does TV, movies. It's always great to see him. You know, we were watching some TV show and suddenly, oh, look, David H. Lawrence XVII is the coroner in the basement of this hospital talking to some detective about something, you know, and it's great. The guy is an accomplished actor, but he's also a very accomplished voice actor and a great friend of our show and a sponsor because he has a couple of great products. We know he has VO2GoGo.com, which is his school where he teaches voice acting and the business of voice acting. But one of his greatest accomplishments is the Rehearsal app, because it is an app for all actors. And face it, kids, if you're in the voice business, you are an actor. And part of that is learning your lines, memorizing your copy, and making sure that when you do an audition or when you actually go into a studio to do an audition, perhaps you've gotten the copy beforehand. You can go in there, and if you have it memorized, you can still have it in front of you, but if you've memorized it, it's a lot easier to sound conversational, which is, you know, that wasn't said in a conversational way. It was like said in, you know, I'm sitting next to you in a bar, conversational. But if you want to have a way to learn your copy and also have some great tools for submitting voiceover auditions, get the Rehearsal app, and you can get it over at rehearsal.pro. Rehearsal.pro. Check it out. It works on your iPhone. It's got like over 160, 150 features, something like that. And check it out. Go to rehearsal.pro. It probably takes you right to the app store. Check out all the features and see if it's something that might help you. And it's not expensive, easy to get, and it apparently works fabulous on iOS devices. That's the Rehearsal app at rehearsal.pro. Go get it now.
Having dinner tonight? How about having some VO, too?
VoiceOver Body Shop.
Have some voiceover with your dinner tonight on VoiceOver Body Shop, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific.
All right, we're back with our panel, Jordan Reynolds, John McClain, Uncle Roy, and Cliff Zellman. We're talking voiceover technology, which is really what our show is supposed to be about. Yeah. I mean, we talk about some all sorts of stuff.
That was the origination of Labs, which was about audio, but we realized that there was just so much more to talk about, and our guests had so much more to offer in those areas. But
that's
tonight,
true.
It is definitely about technology for show. And so we've got questions in the chat room, which we love to have more of them. If you want to send them in, please do. But I'm logging back into Google I just got kicked out.
Oh, so okay. Well, I've got the questions here. So I'll start off. We had one that was actually sent in to the guys at VOBS.TV from Gary Hetzler. He said, I'd like to ask, for those of us home studio voiceover people that are PC-based, what are the pros and cons of the following? Adobe Audition, Sony SoundForge Pro, and Reaper. Also, if you have a personal favorite, what is it and why? Cliff. Audio.
Oh, let me turn you guys on. How about them apples? Go ahead, Cliff.
You're on.
Well, I'm a Mac guy, and it's a PC question, but I like Reaper.
Why?
It's got a very low learning curve. Everything seems to make sense. It seems to be relatively easy. I don't use it. It's not my DAW of choice. But between the ones that you listed, what were they again? There was SoundForge. Yeah.
Audition, Reaper. Yeah. You know, you mentioned Pro Tools, though, because that's what you use.
Yeah, but Pro Tools is not for everybody, and I have stopped the, you got to use Pro Tools. No. You use what works for you. Whatever booked your last gig, keep using that.
All right. Jordan.
Being a former PC guy, but now Mac guy, but knowing PC stuff, of that list, hands down, I love all of them, but hands down, Adobe Audition. Adobe Audition is much more stable on PC than Mac, but it's the closest to Twisted Wave, which is my favorite for voice talent who aren't extremely tech savvy, because it's a big waveform, it's single channel, it's simple to use, and it has a lot of great built-in features and effects like auto heal and stuff like that. It's not what I use because I'm on a Mac, but I'm actually using Twisted Wave for all my auditions. That's my long answer. Adobe Audition.
Cliff?
Yes, sir.
He already said
it. Oh, that's right. He already said it. Okay.
I like Audition, too. I mean, I love Audition.
So do I. I use it all the time. John? Yeah.
I recommend Adobe Audition to talent because you can work in a really simple mode, as Jordan was saying, much like, say, Twisted Wave. And then as you become more developed, you can always switch over to the multi-track view and use it that way. I think it's a really great piece of software.
And it has the spectrum, which I especially like, which is it's Photoshop for audio, which is really a cool feature of that. Uncle Roy.
Well, As most people know, I've been with Adobe since it was Cool Edit 96.
Ooh.
And then it was Cool Edit and Cool Edit Pro and all that business. But Adobe Audition, Auto Heal is a great lifesaver, especially if you're using the Spectral View. You can do non-destructive editing in the multi-track, and you can have stacks in the multi-track. So it's very versatile. It's what I have my own intuitive keyboard shortcuts that I set up, and it makes editing much, much faster.
Yeah, something Roy just pointed out. I think it's super important to be using a program that allows you to assign your own key commands. I use Nuendo. The ability to assign your own key commands is, I think, paramount to efficient editing.
Pretty sure they all do. I know even Audacity, when I set people up with that, I put a lot of shortcuts.
Yeah. You can't do it in Clip software.
No, you can't. Not Pro Tools, but you can do it in Audition.
You can.
Well, they have a keyboard thing that...
You can assign...
Well, if you use another program, Quick Keys.
Yeah.
No, and there's, you know, you can assign keys to various...
You don't have to use their template.
But the thing is that they have somebody built in. You know, you don't really have to assign them. I mean, whatever you want to do, there's already a shortcut for it. Shift this, shift W, shift M, shift Q, you know.
You can learn the ones that are built in or with the other softwares. Yeah, I mean, I like to push N for normalize and M for marker and things like that.
S for silence.
Strip silence. And Apple E is separate. You know?
Yeah, you're so easy to...
Plenty of stuff.
Nuendo, because I brought them over with me from Pro Tools back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, Innuendo's beautiful, though. I mean, just for eye-pleasing.
Oh, it's eye candy, right?
It's beautiful, yeah.
All right, moving on to a question from Gonzalez. Hey, man. He's asking about headphones. He used to swear by his Sony MDR-7506 headphones, and he switched to Fostex T50 RP Mark III's. He says, I also do production. What would you recommend out of the AKG, AKG 240, and the usual suspects for VO work? I don't quite understand the last part of the question, but I think he just wants to know, what headphones do you guys tell people to buy? Let's start with Jordan. Jordan's...
doesn't have his headphones on. There we go.
I've got to have my...
Jordan likes AKGs.
Well, today because I'm an idiot and I have too many pairs of headphones that I don't need, tonight it's AKGs because... the most comfortable pair I have for long, long use. Are they my favorite sounding? Are they the most accurate? No, but they're open back or semi open, I believe. So they breathe better. They're the lightest headphones I've ever owned. And they just adjust easily. They're incredibly comfortable, but I don't love them for overall session work. I actually prefer what the pretty girl over here's got on here. The audio. Mare's wearing the Audio Technica.
Have her model them for us.
Yeah. Come on.
Come on in.
It's the Audio Technica MTH 50s?
Those are the 30s.
No, these are the 50s. Oh. These are the $150, $160 pair. These are my favorite. Are they terribly accurate? No. Hardly any headphones are unless you pay like, what, $500-$600, right, George? George knows way
at
more
least.
About headphones. But those are my, for comfort, AKG K240s.
K240s.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay. And then for VO sessions and monitoring and hearing all the details and being closed in and isolated.
Hey, Cliff, we hear you, buddy.
M50. I'm sorry?
Hey, Cliff, we hear everything you do, man. Every riff.
That's cool.
Remember, there's actually an audience watching the show tonight and they want to hear every word.
He's just producing my spot. That's all.
John.
I use Sennheiser HD 280 Pros in all of the rooms at Dog and Pony, and I'm very pleased with them.
Very nice. Uncle Roy.
Well, I've got these old Sony MDR V150s that I swear by. I mix everything on them, and then I check on speakers. I've got my Sennheiser 414s from when I was 18 years old that are still happening.
Oh, man.
Oh my God. No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'd find those in the radio studio, and it would always have makeup from the gal that was on after you or before you.
Right? Right?
Say something. I got to get a screenshot. Go ahead. Talk and hold it up.
I use Sennheiser 414s when I'm listening to my Sennheiser 414 microphone.
Talk about bleed, huh? Oh my God.
But I really like these Sennheiser 380s. That's the newer headphones that I got.
Okay, and
Harlan's headphones are very comfortable.
Yeah, I'm wearing them right now. They're very they're very unusual sound tonally. Like, they're not a bright headphone.
Right. I wouldn't mix on them, but I would edit on them.
Yeah, and they're very, very easy on the ear. Think they're not fatiguing. So did we get to everybody? Who did Dan, what do you use?
What do I use?
When you use headphones?
When I use
rare,
which I hardly use headphones. Now, I'm unlike all of our guests. I don't produce a lot of stuff. When I do, I usually use my studio monitors,
and they are.
And I have KRK Rocket 5s.
Rocket
for the
5s.
Time being, you know, okay. Now that we've got all these manufacturers sending us stuff, I'll get to check out some more high-end gear and see what's going on. But what headphones do I use? I like the Harlan Hogans because they are very, very flat.
Yeah.
They reproduce me as I exist, which to me is my philosophy always. When you're recording, you want to capture yourself as you exist, and you want to hear yourself back exactly how you recorded yourself. And that's why I like those particular headphones. They're at a great price point. They're, you know, they're comfortable. And other than that, I have my little Marley, you know, Bob Marley wooden bass headphones that I use when I'm listening to the radio, whatever. But other than that, I don't use them when I'm doing a remote, unless, you know, if I do have a headphone feed into the studio here, into the booth. And usually I have my Harlan Hogans, and I'll flip up one ear because I want to hear myself in the environment in which I'm recording.
Yeah, you can do this action like
very
really
easily. Yeah.
That's very important. I want to say that I think most of us agree that when you're recording your voice, you probably shouldn't be wearing headphones unless you need them to communicate with Source Connect or a phone patch or something like that.
Right.
And my headphones of choice, because everybody wants to know,
George,
is the Beyerdynamic DT770s. Those are my in-studio cans that I use for all my critical listening. And I'm not an engineer. I don't mix and produce. But for critical listening, I've just fallen in love with the way they feel on my head. They're super comfortable. Again, headphones, are they always the most accurate? No, but it really comes down to what you're familiar with. And once you know your headphones and what you sound like on those headphones and how that translates to the way you would sound everywhere else in the world, and once you learn that relationship between your headphones and the rest of the world, then you've learned your headphones. That can take months, years. So when I try on other headphones, I don't like headphones that sound dramatically different from my Beyers, because then I have to relearn them.
Right.
So I, even the cheap headphones that I buy for portable use, I want them to sound a little like those Beyerdynamics. Right. And what do they sound like? I don't know. They're not super flat. They're a little slightly bass heavy, maybe, because they're sealed. And they have a little top end sizzle, but they're not too mid rangey like the Sonys. They're not quite the ice pick in the forehead that I get out of those M7506s. So those are my faves.
And it's important to know that, you know, it's a personal preference sort of thing.
Yeah.
We can recommend all sorts of different headphones to people. But
you got to try them on.
Yeah, you got to try them on.
Do yourself a favor. Next time you're in New York, go to B&H.
Yeah.
That's how I discovered my Beyerdynamics. They have a huge headphone display, and they all are usable. You can listen to every one of them. That's the only way you're going to know.
Bring something that you're familiar with too.
Yeah,
you know, when you listen to them.
Yep.
Yeah. They also have a mic room. It's a crappy room because it's too parallel. You know, they have a mirror wall and a glass wall for security reasons.
Yeah.
But they have, you know, 50 or 80 mics set up with 30 mic preamps, and you can patch around and listen.
It's fun.
Yeah. The thing is, could you ever audition a mic outside of your own booth? I just find that kind of silly. It's like, you know, what do I sound like on this and on that pair of headphones?
Yeah. The room has to be a part of the equation.
Yeah.
J.S. Gilbert, he had a run, but his question actually has already been kind of been answered by Jordan. He said, George, I've had a number of audio folks say that you need to build a dead quiet recording environment if the room is less than 10 by 12 or so. And most people should roll back 80 hertz, several decibels. But this is what the recommendation is. Any thoughts? So I think what JS is saying is like most small rooms have too much bass, so we have to high pass filter out the bass. And I would say, yeah, that's almost definitely true. Unless you've had the luxury and time and the budget to tune your rooms beautifully at the low end, that's almost always the first thing I do is press the low cut switch on the mic or on the preamp, or in their processing, set up a low cut or high pass. The two mean the same thing, basically. And remove as much of the low end as possible. Whatever the garbage is that's not contributing to the clarity of the voice, the rumble, we just EQ it out. So right.
Yeah, because generally the human voice does not go below 80 hertz.
Very rarely. You have to be a Ravenscroft, Thurl Raisin. What the hell is that guy's name?
Thurl Ravenscroft. Yeah.
Thurl Ravenscroft. Is the voice of the original voice of
Tony the Tiger.
Tony the Tiger, and he sings the Grinch song.
Right.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
That always gets people singing.
That guy is amazing. Unbelievable.
But putting in that high pass filter also helps everybody's noise floor, because it's crap that you don't need. We can't hear it, but we can see it. We can measure it.
Yeah,
And it eats up in your stereo bus. So it's stuff that's there that you don't need.
Yeah. I mean, this V13 has a high pass filter on it. If I flip that on, I noticed
it thins it out a little bit.
It thins it out a little bit. Maybe if I got a little closer, the proximity effect is a little bit better.
Right.
But I noticed immediately it kicked out. This thing had a distinct rumble. It's a very sensitive microphone.
Sure.
And once I clicked that filter in, it was very, very usable.
And with women's voices, and I know we haven't addressed women's microphones, voices, whatever, because I don't think there is a woman's mic per se, really. In terms of high pass filter, you can oftentimes take out everything below like 120 on some women's voices.
Yep.
And it really
I agree.
I was
going to say, it's like you can start with 80 hertz on almost every voice as a safe point, but then in particular women, you know, like a higher pitched female voice, you can go all the way up to 120, but on most men, it's going to start to be sound noticeable and it's going to start to sound thin. So at the end of the day, it's started 80, but if you still feel like you're getting rumble or your clients are complaining that it sounds boomy, talk to one of us and send us samples, and we'll be able to dial in and exact how much you can take out before it starts sounding wrong or bad.
Yeah. You start playing with that pass filter and your slope set to say 6 dB per octave, you know, that 80, you could start thinning out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I prefer to set the slope pretty steep, but keep it somewhere around maybe 50.
It depends on the room.
You know? True. Yeah. But if you set an 80 with a 60 dB per octave slope, you're really chewing away some of that low end.
Which
and George, why don't you describe to the listeners what he means by a 60 dB per octave slope?
Oh, the slope.
I know that would be good.
That's kind of like, yeah, that's kind
of
like
pretty much instead of this, do this.
Yeah, the slope is.
Yeah, it's like 80 being down here and you're getting up into your frequency range.
Right. Slope is how quick the frequency falls away.
Falls off.
If it's a steep slope, then everything below the frequency you choose falls away very quickly. And a shallower slope is less quickly. And that's denoted by decibel or dBs per octave.
Right.
So that's related to music. So for every octave lower in pitch you go, it drops down by 6 decibels in volume, which is about 50% or so. And so you can change that setting in most DAWs. They have that ability to play with that setting.
And after 3 octaves, I mean, the low end is non-existent.
Yeah, then there is in essence gone. We talked a lot about headphones and monitors, and I know we've kind of talked.
Wait.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But
yeah, gals, I want to push. I want to Cliff. Push my headphones that I love.
Yeah,
so
yeah, we totally missed you on the head cams.
it's really funny. I either love my Focals or there's a $33 pair of $33 headphones that are just wonderful. They're made horrible. They fall apart in 6 months. But headphones, my number one choice, without a doubt. I've used hundreds and hundreds are the Focals. Spirit Pros, $359, built like a tank, and oh my goodness, what you've got is what you hear is what you got.
Really? Yeah. Would you say that they're accurate, like they're flat sounding?
They are. They're perfect. Whatever you're recording is what you're hearing.
They match
my Focal monitors. So together, you know, I can actually, I take off my headphones slowly, let my ears adjust for the, you know, the proximity of the sound hitting my ears. But if I take them off slowly, what I hear coming out of the monitors matches the headphones, and it's wonderful.
That's nice.
Yeah, I'm already buying a pair right now. Thanks.
I don't want to go to Amazon and
Go to Sweetwater. Call Ryan at Sweetwater. Tell him you want to try them out. Pay for them. If you don't like them, you send them back. But they're just beautiful, just wonderful, tight, and they're nice and tight and comfy, and they cover the whole ear. And in here, it's wonderful.
It also looks like someone sneezed on them. That's great.
It does. It's got that kind of like that liquid kind of look. Sorry.
I love Focal.
Do you guys in really cans? Nice. Do you edit in cans versus yes. mix? Is that generally the way people go, or no?
Just I edit on my
order. Okay,
you know,
starting with
if there's nobody home, you know, I'll crank them on the speakers if it's 10, 11 o'clock at night. Focals are fun.
John? I do my course editing on speakers, and then I put headphones on and give one last listen and do the mouth clicks and breaths. Yeah. And whatever.
You do your quality on the cans.
Yes, sir.
Not necessarily EQing. You know, I agree with Roy. You know, the little teeny tiny things, crank them up the cans, you hear them real good.
Even if nobody else can hear them, I can hear them, and you know.
Yes, that has been proven.
Yep.
What was the other one? Oh, one last one from Devox. Question: -55 or -60 dB sound floor raw? Question mark. Probably a lot of mics and preamp combinations that would not pass that all the way down, aren't there? I mean, the input gain all the way down would rule out mics or preamps using tubes or ribbons.
Well, the reason it would rule out ribbons is because the ribbons traditionally are low output microphones, and you'd have to crank up.
Yeah, right.
And you would get a lot of mic preamp noise.
Line noise, electrical noise.
Or self noise of the mic, yeah.
Or me playing guitar in the background.
Well, tube mics are never quite as quiet as solid state. I mean, they're just, the circuitry is a little bit too noisy. So if you're looking for the cleanest possible recording, lowest noise, don't just avoid tubes. Now, ribbon mics, they're like getting really popular lately. I'm seeing at the trade shows, we saw so many ribbon mics.
Yeah. And
a lot of these ribbon mics are now active, which basically means the microphone has a circuit inside the mic that ups the output of the mic dramatically.
It has its own little preamp in it.
Yeah, sort of. It's a very, very simple preamp circuit, basically. And they add about 25 dB of gain to a ribbon mic. So it goes from being something that needs an extremely high-end, high-gain preamp to something that you can plug into a Scarlett 2i2 and is now usable. Now, ribbon mics are still generally, you know, I don't know if frowned upon is the word. They're just not popular in voiceover.
Well, they're very flat. They don't, there's no presence boost.
Right.
You know. Right. Not a lot of high end.
But if you've ever listened to a TV show or a radio show from the 40s, that's what you hear. It's, you know, there's no low end to it.
They have a lot of proximity effect too, right?
Yeah.
You have to get back.
Or even a horn section, you know, today.
That's what I use on horns. Right.
Yeah, and they apparently and guitarists like them.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I know I haven't recorded music in quite a long time, but when I wanted to smooth out a woman's voice on a vocal part, that was a kind of a theater kind of delivery, you know what I'm talking about. It's got edge, it's very bright. I put up an old Octava M319 or something. I can't remember the model of it. M52, I think it is. I donated to the Don LaFontaine lab. I don't have the mic anymore. But it was very warm and flat, and it worked beautifully to counteract that. So I don't know. I'm kind of wanting to dabble more with ribbon mics and try them on more voices. And, you know, the other unique a property of a ribbon mic is they're super directional, but in two directions.
It's almost a figure eight.
Right. Yeah. So they're really directional. So like if you have a booth that's very dead behind the mic and very dead behind you, but there's a giant piece of glass, studio bricks, huge piece of glass right next to the mic, a ribbon mic like that could help because it would cancel out the sound coming from the sides. If you ever get to play with one, talk into the side of the mic and you'll be blown away how the sound is almost completely gone.
Yeah.
Totally canceled.
Well, I have a great collection of ribbon mics here. Mm-hmm. I collect them and I've got some real beauties and perhaps we could play with them one night.
I think we should have a ribbon mic night.
Yeah.
I've got two that I can donate to that.
Any of you guys have any Beyerdynamics 500s?
No. Is that the one that looks like a regular highball?
It's a little ball.
Yeah, it's a vocal mic.
Body. If you guys have any one of those, you call me. I will hop on a plane.
They made that and the M88 or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, they had a 1.6. They had a 1.60.
Or 1.60.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I got one at a yard sale once. It was broken, and I glued the ribbon back on, and it worked or something. But
the top and the bottom.
Fixing ribbons and doing ribbons. I've learned how to do that. It's mind-boggling, and just corrugating the ribbon is something that's people are going, what are you talking about? Let's get
parting shots.
Let's get some parting shots here. Let's go around the horn one more time, and because we really didn't talk about the state of voiceover technology.
Were we intending to tonight?
It doesn't matter. We sort of were.
I got something to throw in there if you.
Cliff, go ahead. You go first.
Parting shot.
If you need a shot. All right. Well, let's talk about emerging technologies. Most of us now, we've got our microphones, we've got our mic choices, we've got our mic pre's, we've got our DAWs, we're good to go. Upgrading, I believe, your equipment. If you're working and you don't see that your flow is going to be changing, you must stick with what you have. But there are two things that I think us as voice talents and producers and directors, we really need to be aware of emerging is two things. One, connectivity. How do we connect to our clients? There's all kinds of new processes and VOIPs going on. Not only how do we connect to our clients with our audio, but how do we connect to clients through social media? So connectivity has two things. Also delivery. How do we deliver our files? There's all kinds of ways that we can do that now. Back in the day, it was FedEx and a 5-inch reel of quarter-inch tape with a little piece of blue tape on the back to signify that they had to rewind it before they played it. Go ahead, Roy. I see it. There you go. Oh, wait. Hey, I still Roy, have...
Say something, Roy. Show that. Oh, my God. Yeah.
There's my task cam right over there. I think you can still see that.
Yeah.
Yes, and I have a virgin reel of 456 on there. But
and here's my Otari 5050 right over here.
Oh, I love that machine. God, that is
amazing. I used to work on the Studers. I loved them.
Love the Studers. So the two things that we really need to stay abreast on is connectivity. How are we connecting to our clients? And how are we delivering our audio? I think that a mic is a mic, a preamp is a preamp, and a DAW is a DAW. But all this other stuff is changing so rapidly. That's what I think.
Jordan.
Well, what was the question? Like, what?
Pay attention. Stop paying attention to your girlfriend. And
No, she's pretty. And so the chat room attendees are very pretty.
Okay, great. We're just a parting shot. Whatever you want to say.
Shot. Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I think, I think the biggest thing that's happening today is as a voice talent, turnaround times are becoming quicker. I mean, because I'm primarily a voice talent. I just happen to be into other things and way too many other things. So, but as a voice talent, turnaround times are becoming crazy. And so it's hard to get out and do anything. What I'm leading to is if you really want to succeed in this as a voice talent, try to get a solid mobile setup. And I'm not trying to open up a can of worms, but really try to make yourself as available as possible and have, like, we keep an Apogee mic in our car. So if we go out to, an early dinner or lunch or whatever, if something has to be turned around in 10 minutes, which sometimes it does, we can go into the car, which is a great booth, and record it. But that is the current trend today with the expectations of voice talent are just to be available and to record something very quickly. Yeah. So just make sure you're ready. And also make sure your main studio setup, if you can afford to duplicate it and have a backup or a contingency plan in place. Like if you only have one laptop, make sure you have, if you can afford it, get some other cheap laptop that at least has Twisted Wave on it and the driver installed for your audio interface. Because if you have a session and it breaks down before, people can be very unforgiving in this business. So that's, I guess I just leave it at that because that's a trend I've been noticing. Faster turnarounds, be available, be ready with your tech.
Great. John McClain.
It's just what I tell all of the voice talent that I work with. Use the KISS method. Keep it simple, silly, right?
Oh, you're nicer than me.
Well, you can really go down a rabbit hole with this stuff, as you can see, but this is a group of people who do this for a living. I think it's super important for talent to keep it simple and then take advantage of this amazing plethora of talent who have spent a lifetime figuring this stuff out if you have the deeper questions. But just, you don't have to go down the rabbit hole unless you're doing production, so why would you?
Yeah.
Uncle Roy.
I agree with John. You know, once you found, and Cliff and really everybody, once you found your mic and your preamp or interface and your DAW, and if your space is treated, as we've been talking about the whole time, then it's really keep it simple. We're not adding a lot of processing, because if somebody else is doing post, they don't want overprocess. They don't want to hear your noise reduction, your noise gate, and your compressor overly compressed or over limited or whatever. We don't want those delivered to us that way, because we do the final production. And then to go off of what Jordan said, turnaround time. I got called on Friday to do casting for they said, "Oh, just send us some reels. We're looking for this old time trailer announcer." I said, "There's nobody's." Yeah, it was great. I said, "There's nobody's demo that has that. I can't. It's got to be a custom audition." So I sent it out to five people. They picked one. They said, "Okay, we want that. Is he available tonight?"
I'm not his manager. I don't know.
Well, so I reached out. He said, "Oh, I'm driving now. I can do it tomorrow morning." And so this was a Saturday job now. And then not only that, two scripts showed up. So I said, "Well, we got to charge you. We got to charge you for the second script."
Of course.
So the turnaround time was insane. And whoever was, and had he not been available, it would have gone to the next guy. So yeah, you got to be at the ready.
All right. Well, that's good advice indeed.
Yes, right.
All right. Well, gentlemen, as always, it is a pleasure to hang out with you. Nothing like 45 minutes or to an hour and a half of dork audio stuff.
Dork fest.
But we'll have you on again. We'll do this again in a few months. And of course, where can everybody reach you if you've got a question? Roy.
Antlandproductions.com. Home of the killer demos.
That's right.
And antlandprods @AOL.com.
He still uses AOL. John McCarthy.
Yeah.
Dogandponystudios.net. Not .com. .net.
Cliff.
Dog and Pony Show.
Cliff. A-amazingdemos.com. A-amazingdemos.com. The home of the amazing demos. And or you can reach me at Kalifu, KALIFU at airmail.net. Kalifu at airmail.net.
All right.
Just JordanReynolds.com or demoswithchops.com. Everything's there. Easy to get a hold of me.
Excellent. All righty. Well, that's going to do that for the roundtable. We'll be right back to clean things up and get the mop out right after this.
Fighting broke out overnight for Sundays. And
what do you want to watch tonight?
I don't know. I mean, the same stuff's always on all the time.
Oh, I am so sick of American Pickers. What about VOBS?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. You just read my mind. That's perfect.
I want to watch it because you know why? They've got the best BS about VO.
VOBS. Mondays, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific on VOBS.us.
All right. Well, again, thanks to all of our great guests tonight. But, you know, I have to tell you about the all-new voiceoveressentials.com. It's all new. Harlan's redone it. It's really cool. VOE can now offer discounted turnkey bundles like their Plus and Pro bundles. They actually have Plus and Pro bundles. And what is he talking about? The Pro, for example, includes everything you need to record at home or on the road. A Portabooth Pro. All right, and with its heavy-duty, checkable travel case, which I have, it's fabulous. You can carry it. It fits right in the luggage rack. It's really cool. You get a MicPort Pro, or I'm sorry, a MicPort Pro USB Pre, the little thing about the size of a cigar, or a very small cigar that you plug your microphone into. It's a little preamp and digital interface, and Harlan Hogan's voice optimized headphones, which we talked about, a three-way adjustable international desk stand, the Vox pop filter, a relationship-saving voiceover, or a voiceover recording sign, which you put outside your studio so when you're recording, it's on, and then people know that you're recording and they don't bug you, and the five-star VO 1A microphone. Nothing else needed. All cables, etc., supplied, including an LED light in the Portabooth Pro. It comes with this little cool little light so you can see inside your Portabooth Pro. All at a savings of $125. So he's got these great bundles, and they'll be adding an audiobook narrator and a podcast bundle soon over at voiceoveressentials.com. So go over there and get one of those. And Harlan, thanks for being with us for 5.5 years. We love you, man. All righty. Well, let's wrap things up here. What's going on? First off, November, we're going to be doing Studio Month. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be at some great studios. We're going to start off at the... We're going to be off next week because it's...
Halloween is dark.
Halloween is dark, aside from it being Halloween. We just won't be here. You're going to be... You won't have time because kids are going to be ringing your doorbells.
Yeah.
Ella has to go out and trick-or-treat.
It's a big holiday. My brother's going to be here, too, visiting from Pennsylvania. So we're going to have a blast.
Yeah. So we won't be here next week, but we will be here for 4 straight weeks. At studios, we're going to be at the Mark Grau, legendary Mark Grau studio. Mm-hmm. We're going to be at Voice Tracks West. We're going to be at the Gardner Street studio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to be doing a remote. We're going to be showing you these studios, talking to these operators, and essentially a lot of the same stuff we talked about tonight. What are their thoughts on voiceover and what makes their studio so damn good?
What makes them unique, too?
Yeah, exactly.
We picked these 4 studios because, one, they all work with voiceover a lot. Maybe not exclusively, but mostly exclusively. But, two, they're all unique. You know, they're all a little bit different. They're priced differently. They're different sizes. And
yep.
So we really wanted to contrast all these different Hollywood studios.
Cool. Donors of the week.
Donors. Well, I don't know if we upgraded this. Did you update this list, or is this from last week?
I didn't get
week?
There yet.
Oh, okay. So I should look at last week's list. Why don't you... Continue on, and I'll go back and find those emails.
All righty. Well, let's see. You can get our VOBS logo gear now. If you're at our website, there's that little red banner that's probably right over here, right above my head. Click on that. It will take you to our Cafe Press site, where you can get a logo of our VoiceOver Body Shop logo on anything. Just, it's amazing all the different products you can get that on. So go over there. The show logs are accessible also right above me. Jack Gulley is still writing down every word we've said. He was busy tonight because there were a lot of words said. And we're going to make sure that that gets out with the recording of this. And that's important because maybe it'll help you find something that you perhaps didn't catch tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to hear it again. Or if you didn't get to watch, you can go to the show log and figure that out. So what do we have for donors?
Donors, we got one that just came in from Kelly. Thank you very much. Eric Aragoni, never misses an episode. Thank you, my friend. We've got one that came in from Patty Givens. Thanks, Patty. She's doing a sustaining donation because we make a donation. You can set it up to, say, send us $1 every month.
Really?
You know, if you want.
And we appreciate it.
Whatever you want. We've got one that just came in from Amanda Fellows, another sustaining donation.
Love Amanda. Great guy.
Brian Page, another sustaining donation. My dad. Thanks, Dad.
Hey, Dad's sending you money. All right.
I know, it's great. And also going back towards last week's dates, we still got a few more left here. Thomas Pinto.
Yep.
Chevy Avellino. Chevy. I call her Chevy.
Shelly.
Chevy Avellino.
Shelly Avellino voiceovers. She's a sustaining donor, and she helps with the chat room. And going back another couple of days, Philip Sapir. Thank you, Philip. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Really appreciate it. Yeah. Just helps that little extra. Lets us do things like get our guests Christmas gifts and, you know.
Yeah, and buy new cameras like and things along those lines.
It's really nice of you to be able to do that.
And upgrade our software and things along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
The podcast. This is probably going to be a great podcast episode.
Definitely. Like, this is a long episode. These long episodes are great to listen to. If that's easier for you, you can't watch the show live, check it out as a podcast. And you can just find it on any podcasting tool of choice.
Right.
Whatever device you use, type in VOBS in iTunes or whatever, you should be able to find it, no problem.
All right. And if you want to be in our studio audience, if you happen to be here in Southern California, like if you're like here to be on Jeopardy or something, or Wheel of Fortune, and you happen to be in the neighborhood.
You're going to be in another studio when it's a little easier to get into?
Easier
to
get into.
We won't make you wait outside for 4 hours.
There's dogs to pet and food to eat and stuff like that. They don't do that at Wheel of Fortune.
No, they
just make you stand in line.
That's right.
Write to us at theguys at VOBS.tv and let us know. That's always fun when we have people here in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
We need to thank our sponsors, of course, Harlan Hogan at VoiceOver Essentials.
We also have had sponsorship from Edge Studio.
And Source Elements.
VO Extra.
And Antland Productions, where you can get yourself a killer demo. By the way, what's going on at Edge this month?
Going on at Edge? Well, the link that normally would take me there got lost out of the bottom, so I'm going to go find it real quick and see what's going on at Edge. We got a spreadsheet here with all the
lots of stuff. Happenings. I get the newsletter, and it's amazing how many things go on over there.
Yeah, we're pretty busy. We just had the audiobook narration with John Heller. That was last week. This week, the classes going on are Edge, are Audacity 101 and 201. And those are being taught by Dan Friedman and I. Dan's teaching the 101. I teach the 201. If you're interested in signing up for either of those, you can go to edgestudio.com/audacity-voice-over-training to sign up.
All righty. Thanks tonight to Marcy, of course, Catherine Curridan, our crack producer who gets us all these great guests, Anthony Gettig and Shelly Avellino when they're in the chat room, which apparently they weren't tonight, but thanks for when they do. And, of course, our floor producer and director, Andrew Bushwitz.
That's right.
Who does a great job switching this show.
I want to say it the way Merrill Reese would say it on the Eagles broadcast that I used to work for.
Okay.
And producer, hold your hand over your heart for Andrew Bushwitz. That's the way he would say it. Joseph A. McPeak. I can hear him saying it now. He's still saying it. I think the same guy's been doing that show for 35 years.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Well. Some radio guys just last forever. But anyway, well, that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks for tuning in for our annual, semi-annual Audio Masters Roundtable with our favorite round of geeks. And thanks for all your questions, and thanks for participating. I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver.
Body Shop.
Or VO.
BS.
Have a great Halloween. We'll see you in 2 weeks from the Mark Rao Legendary Studios.
See you later.
Toodaloo.
Thanks for joining us once again for another episode of VoiceOver Body Shop.